The risks and rewards of making a new medicine. From Marketplace in New York, I'm David Brancaccio. The pharmaceutical giant Pfizer is reportedly close to paying $14 billion to buy a coveted prize in the biosciences world, Medivation. That San Francisco company developed a drug called Xtandi to treat prostate cancer that generated $2 billion in sales last year, according to the Wall Street Journal. The risky way to make money in biotech is to try to develop a drug that works and gets FDA approval. A less risky way is Pfizer's strategy, paying to buy a company that took the risk. Eric Gordon is a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business.
Pfizer has become pretty much an acquisition company, and not just recently. Their all-time best-selling drug, the statin for your heart, Lipitor, came when they acquired Warner Lambert. So Pfizer's basically a marketing machine and a late-stage development machine. They need the Medivations, and you know they've tried some other deals that didn't work. The Allergan acquisition got shot down by the Treasury Department. They went after AstraZeneca. That failed. They really need a deal to pump up their pipeline.
The University of Michigan's Eric Gordon watches M&A the way the rest of us watch the NBA or MLB. China is a step closer to buying an agribusiness giant crucial to America's food supply. Shares of Syngenta are up 10% in pre-market trading now after the U.S. Committee on Foreign Investment said okay. Antitrust regulators are still reviewing ChemChina's bid. Let's check some numbers. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down about 0.2%, 34 points in the case of the Dow future. The FT 100 in London is down 0.4%. College students and parents of college students, now you can file that complicated federal financial aid form 3 months earlier, October 1st. Typically, many parents had to wait until the new year to fill out the FAFSA because they needed fresh W-2 forms and other fresh tax data. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott has more.
The FAFSA used to come out on January 1st, after many students had already applied to college. Carrie Warwick with the National College Access Network says now students will be able to find out earlier how much help they can expect from the government.
Students who fill out the FAFSA in October would have that information with them as they're deciding where to apply to college.
Another big change, in the past, students had to enter tax information from the most recent year before many families had even filed their taxes. Now they can use data from 1 year earlier and import it directly from the IRS. Kimberly Jones with the Council for Opportunity in Education says that will improve a cumbersome process that can discourage people from applying for aid.
But it's not the panacea that's necessarily going to guarantee smooth sailing for all students.
A new bill proposed in Congress would further simplify the application and require students to file it just once instead of every year of college. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Let's check in with our election year series about ways for us to get serious about long-term opportunities and threats, the ones that don't fit into a single budget year or election cycle. The late writer and social critic Kurt Vonnegut offered an idea during an interview I did with him on public TV.
Look, I'll tell you, it's one thing that no cabinet had ever had is a secretary of the future. And there are no plans at all for my grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
What if, big if, the next president appointed a secretary of the future to consider how today's actions might play out in 20 or 50 years? Companies have them, often called chief sustainability officers. Now, here's one person who has the credentials. Brian David Johnson is a futurist at Arizona State's Center for Science and Imagination. He has a new project to ask people to think about their sense of the American dream. Brian, thanks for linking up here.
Hello.
So you've been out talking to people about their conceptions of the American dream.
Yes, and I've been more specifically asking what's the future of the American dream. For myself as a futurist, one of the things that I've learned is the way that you change the future is you change the story that people tell themselves about the future that they will live in. I've seen it happen time and time again in universities, in corporations, in the government. If you can change that story, people will actually make different decisions.
One of the groups you met with were farmers?
And so for them, when you talk about the future, it's a very different conversation. There's a little bit about the farm, and there's a little bit about commodities and prices and trade, but it gets really local really quickly. And I was talking to an apple grower up in Vermont by the name of John, and I asked John, what was the future of the American dream? What was the future of his farm? And he said to me, Brian, my farm didn't have a future 2 years ago. And the only time my farm actually got a future was when my son Jack decided to come back and work the farm with me. Oftentimes, the future has very little to do with economics, very little to do with technology, and has everything to do with people and everything to do with family members and how they are tightly knit into people's not only personal lives, but also business lives as well.
Now, we do live in a country where family incomes have been really quite stagnant, even with this apparent economic recovery by some measures. You must have some people who feel, when you ask about the future of the American dream, maybe a little pessimistic.
I've had people who are downright angry. And I was completely humbled in Burlington, Vermont, where I stood up and it was standing room only. And what they said was, what's the future of the American dream? Well, first you need to tell me, well, who's America and whose dream? And that really struck to the heart of a lot of the conversations that I had. We have to understand that the future involves everybody, that the future involves possibly people you don't agree with, and the future involves people, quite honestly, that you may not even like. And we need to have that conversation.
Brian David Johnson used to be the Intel Corporation's chief futurist. He's now futurist in residence at Arizona State University's Center for Science and the Imagination. And the project asks, what is the future of the American dream? Mr. Johnson, thank you.
David, it was a pleasure.
Should the next U.S. president appoint a secretary of the future to consider how today's actions might shape our country in 20 or 30 years? We're taking suggestions from you about what might be job one. Go to marketplace.org/secretary of the future. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.